good morning. My name is Tommy. I am on staff here at Asbury. I'm not the lead pastor. Matt is, as Maddie mentioned, out of town this week at General Conference. And I grew up in Houghton, and I grew up going to a church on Highway 80 just down the street. And growing up in church, I heard this sentence, this phrase, over and over and over again growing up. And I'm curious if anyone in the room could finish the sentence for me. And the sentence is this: it's not about religion, it's about candy, relationship. I saw one person nodding their head. I'm like, okay, cool, candy, I got you. You nailed it. If you would have missed it, it would have been a bad setup. I heard forever growing up, it's not about religion, it's about relationship. And when I think about that expression, what strikes me as ironic and funny is that the people that always told me that were the most religious people I've ever met. And I mean that in a good way. I mean in a positive way, for the most part. These people would read their Bible daily, right? That's a religious practice. They would go to church every time the doors were open. That's a religious practice. They were faithful in giving money and tithing to the church and giving to the community outreach. They were faithful to serve in their church and serve in their community. These are religious practices. They had a pretty strict moral guideline that they took very seriously for themselves and for others. That's a religious practice. So the people that would always tell me, it's not about religion, it's about relationship, were the most religious people I met. And for the most part, I mean that in a positive way. And I think the sentence is not even accurate to begin with, because a part of religion, or the point of religion, is to help us cultivate relationship. So it's not about religion, it's about relationship. It's kind of a false dichotomy, because one of the goals of religion is to help us cultivate relationship not only with God, but also with ourselves and with other people in our community. Religion in and of itself isn't a bad thing. Religion can be, and usually is, for the most part, a good thing. And if you knew my journey of the past 20 years of being in ministry and all the stuff I've seen done in the name of religion, for me to come up this morning and say I think religion's still pretty much a good thing is crazy and a shock. But religion, I think, for the most part, is still a force for good in our community, in our world. In fact, Jesus himself was a very religious person. He was very Jewish in his practice. He got in trouble a lot because he asked a lot of questions and did a lot of things that caused really stiff-necked people to kind of get frustrated. But Jesus was a very religious person, and Jesus himself didn't have a problem with religion. He didn't have a problem with the Jewish practices, for the most part, of the people around him. And when he interacted with people that were not Jewish, like Gentiles and pagans, Jesus didn't really tend to have a problem with their religions either. You go to John chapter 4, he talks to the Samaritan woman at the well, and she worships in a different place and has different beliefs, and she asks questions about faith, and he kind of ignores those and goes more to how she's doing as a human. So Jesus was very religious himself, and he didn't tend to have really a problem with religion as a structure. But Jesus did have a big problem with religious leaders that used religion as a way to control, as a way to manipulate, as a way to build their own coffers to get rich. Jesus had a major problem when religion was used in harmful ways, because in his mind, they were using the name of God in blasphemous, heretical, selfish ways. And Jesus had a big problem with that. Now, when Jesus was on earth, there were two major religious groups in the Jewish world that he was around. One group were the Pharisees, we've heard of them. One group were also the Sadducees. So the Pharisees, their power was mainly in the synagogue, which would be the local congregations around Jerusalem and the Roman Empire at the time. So you had the Pharisees, who were the rabbis, and they had their power in the synagogues, the local church communities. And Jesus took issue with them when they used the law as legalism to control and shame and manipulate the community around them. Jesus didn't have a problem with law. He said, I came to fulfill the law. But Jesus had a big problem when the rabbis would use the law as a weapon against the people, and as a way to maintain their own power and separateness and control and manipulate. So Jesus told the Pharisees at times, when you use the law to keep people from God, which is ironic because the law was meant to connect people to God. He says, when you use the law in a way that actually keeps people from God, I wish you would just tie a giant millstone around your neck and go jump in the Sea of Galilee. Now that is Jesus as a mob boss. That's mafia talk right there. He's saying, I want you to put on concrete shoes and go jump in the river. I want you to go drown yourself. When you use the law in a way that's legalistic and controlling and keeping people from God, go kill yourself. It's a very strong language. Maybe it's hyperbole. I don't know. He's mad, mad, mad at them, right? So he had a problem when religious leaders used power and control to manipulate other people and for their own selfish gain. Now, when he gets to the Sadducees, their power was in the temple in Jerusalem. And Jews would come from all over annually, all the time, to make sacrifices in the temple for forgiveness of sins. Now, the Sadducees were the priests. Yeah, the rabbis were the Pharisees. The priests were typically the Sadducees. And they loved being priests because it gave them a lot of political power, not only with the Jewish people, but also with the Roman Empire. And they got stinking rich off of this gig. And they used that as a way to take money from the poor and become rich themselves. And so the famous story of Jesus getting fighting mad with the Sadducees is when he goes into the temple and he flips the tables. You guys are taking the temple of God that's meant to be a place of refuge, a place of hope, and a place of restoration and healing for the outcast, for the poor, for the sinner. And you guys are using it to turn a buck. You're taking the system I built to reconnect people with God, and you're using it to make money and get rich. So Jesus got mad with them and flipped the tables and chased them out with a whip. Jesus had a big problem with religious leaders who use religion as a way to control other people or make money off the poor. But Jesus did not have a problem with religion. In fact, he was a very religious person. Okay. So what is religion? What's the definition of religion? And there's lots of definitions. I looked at different things, but this is kind of where I try to get the simplest, clearest definition that works for me. And religion is a system of beliefs and practices that connect a community to each other and to the spiritual world. So a religion is a system of beliefs and practices that connect a community to each other and to the spiritual world. So in and of itself, it's a good thing. It's a common set of beliefs, a common set of behaviors or practices that connect us to each other and to the divine, the supernatural world. That's what religion is. Now, religion in and of itself can be a good thing. Now, I am about halfway through my program at LSUS to become a counselor. I'm going to get a master's in counseling. So I'm in that world. I've also recently been hired by Clint Davis Counseling as a pastoral counselor there. So I'm beginning to see clients and kind of hear their stories. And the data is out in terms of research. And my anecdotal experience as a few months of a counselor, that is out that people that are religious tend to have a higher quality of mental health. They tend to have higher resilience in dealing with hardships and overall quality of life. So religion can be a force for good. And it is a force for good. And here's the ways that religion can be helpful. Religion is helpful when it gives a community a shared story of the world. When we understand where did we come from? Why are we here? Is there a God or gods? What is that God or what are they like? How do we relate to them? How do we relate to each other? What is our purpose? A religion can give us a common story with which to understand the world, which is helpful when we're navigating and trying to make decisions about politics or society or our own families. Religion gives us a common story to kind of orient our lives around, and that's helpful. Connected to that is it gives us a sense of belonging. Now, some of us have been a part of churches where that's not true, where either the community is stale and dead or it's toxic and not helpful, and we feel more lonely in those communities. So religion can be the opposite, for sure. But religion and religious communities can give us a sense of belonging and connection, which is one of the core human needs for a healthy and holistic life. We feel connected to each other through the shared story and values. Religion is helpful when it gives us a benevolent moral compass. And that's a very vague term. What I mean is religion is helpful when it gives us a moral compass that is helpful to ourselves and to the world. And there's plenty of religious expressions that give us a malevolent moral compass, that give us beliefs that are harmful for ourselves or harmful for other people. But religion can be good when it gives us a general sense of this is what it looks like to live a good life in community with others in the world. And that's a strength that religion has. It gives us almost a clarity around how should we live? What does it look like to be godly? Or in our context, what does it look like to be Christ-like? So religion can be good if it gives us a benevolent moral compass. Religion is also hugely helpful in the sense that it gives us rites of passages with which to understand the natural seasons of our lives. Now, every religion has different versions of this, but they're kind of similar types. Now, for the Methodist world, the rite of passage might be once we Methodist baptized traditionally infants, credo baptism compared to Baptist. I grew up Baptist, which was credo baptism, which is you get baptized after you believe a certain thing. In the Methodist church, it's pedo baptism, which is you get baptized as a child to be a part of the family. Either way, baptism is a rite of passage. It's a ritual that symbolizes that the people are now a part of this community. But if we're going from birth to death, this is the first one maybe in the Methodist world, would be baptism. As you grow older and become a teenager, we have confirmation as a symbol that you are now intellectually a part and emotionally and spiritually a part of this community. You're starting to understand the core expectations and beliefs of the Methodist Church. So you have baptism, then you have confirmation as a rite of passage. We also have communion every week, which is a way to reorient us weekly to the story of the sacrifice and the death and resurrection of Christ. So communion is a ritual in our religion that reorients us as a community to our story. And it's a weekly gut check of how are you doing? How are you doing in relation to your walk with God and your walk with others? So communion is a ritual or rite of passage. We also have weddings, typically. Matt does a great job with those. And another common rite of passage for a religious community are funerals. And a religion and religious community is hugely helpful in helping people process loss and death, and get a framework for understanding why do we die, what happens after we die, how do we grieve this as a community. So a religion can be helpful when it gives us rites of passages that honor big moments in all of our lives. Religion can also be helpful when it creates justice and healing for the marginalized. Every religion in the world, I think for the most part, I'll go with that, most religions in the world put a high value and precedence on serving the poor and giving to the poor and helping those in the community that need help, that are on the fringes of society. So religion is helpful to the world because it can orient a community of people around this belief that we need to help other people. That's a good thing no matter what your religious expression is. It helps us understand loss and suffering. I already mentioned that. It gives us greater purpose, a purpose outside of ourselves, something to latch onto that's bigger than our own story. It's our story. It's God's story. So religion gives us a bigger view of the world. And I already mentioned it can lead to greater mental health and recovery. There's just so much science out there and data that people who have a healthy religious life tend to have a better mental health, better resilience, better connection, and overall quality of life. So that's how religion can be helpful. I'm going to talk about the other stuff too, really quickly. Religion can also be extremely harmful. And many of us in this room may have experienced that in different seasons of our life. Because I've been in ministry for 25 years, I've seen so much, so much bad stuff done in the name of religion too. So I want to make sure that's clear as well. Religion is harmful when it uses shame and fear to control and isolate others. This is what Jesus harped on so much in the New Testament and the Gospels. He constantly went after the Pharisees and Sadducees when they were using religion to shame and control other people. Religion is harmful when it does the opposite of serving the community, when it actually motivates and justifies violence towards other people. So when religion throughout history has been used to justify the mistreatment of others, that's obviously not good. That's harmful. That's anti-Jesus. Religion is harmful when it protects and perpetuates cultural systems that harm the marginalized. That sounds like that's a lot of words. Okay. Religion is harmful when it either creates or protects things that hurt the rest of the community. An example of that would be racism. That's huge, obviously, in our country and in the history of the world. Religion has often used religious language to justify racist behavior and beliefs. Sexism, same thing. Patriarchy, all these kind of things. There's so much that religion has been used to hurt women, for the most part, throughout history. When religion is used to protect or perpetuate classism, and a clear example of that would be in Hinduism, the caste system. So when a religious belief or system or language is used to justify why there's economic injustice, this is why the rich are rich and why the poor are poor, and our religion is going to perpetuate and continue this inequality and injustice. So religion is harmful when it perpetuates these systems that harm other people. And then lastly, another example would be ableism. So the people with disabilities. And you look in the Old Testament and in the New Testament, there's so many stories of Jewish people understanding people with disabilities as being cursed by God or some idea of kind of divine karma. And Jesus constantly just pushes against that and says, no, that's not what's going on here. But if you look at just the history of Christianity and culture at large beyond Jesus, like the past 2,000 years, this kind of belief has really been prevalent until the past 100 or 200 years. The belief that people that have disabilities or something happened to them, it happens because God is punishing them or because they're cursed or demon-possessed or something like that. So religion can be extremely harmful when it creates, enables, protects, perpetuates these different isms that harm the community at large. And we need to be aware of that in our own religious communities and systems. Religion is harmful when it builds the wealth of its leaders at the expense of the poor. I already mentioned that Jesus got mad all the time at the priests that were getting wealthy at the expense of the poor. That still happens today. I could like give like the top 10 list of hucksters and swindlers that are Christian pastors that are millionaires living in mansions because they are taking advantage of the vulnerability of the poor and making empty promises. So religion is definitely harmful when leaders use it to benefit themselves at the expense of others. And it can be used to do that. Religion is harmful when it empowers and protects toxic leaders. We have to get a beer, and I could share horror story after horror story of religious leaders just being abusive, where they may look good on the outside. They're a great communicator. Maybe they're even a great leader in public, but behind the scenes, they're cruel, they're vindictive, they're toxic, they're lying. Maybe there's huge character issues of abuse, sexual scandal, all that kind of stuff. And religion is harmful when the system protects those leaders, when the system prevents accountability from happening in that leadership. So religion can be harmful in those ways. And Jesus clearly, when he's going after the Pharisees and Sadducees, these are leaders who built a system that protected their power. And Jesus is calling that out and challenging that. Religion is harmful when it only becomes self-serving, when its only purpose is no longer to help the community, but just to exist itself. It becomes just nostalgic. And just becomes, this is the way things used to be. And its behaviors and the way it spends its money and its time and its energy and its resources primarily becomes self-serving just so it can continue to exist. When that happens, a religious community is harmful and toxic. And it's also harmful when it uses spiritual bypassing to dismiss grief and alienate the grieving. I gave a sermon on this like a year ago just called Spiritual Bypassing. Real quickly, spiritual bypassing is when you use religious language to dismiss someone's feelings. It could be if someone lost a spouse or lost a kid, like they died, and you go, man, I know God has a greater purpose for you. Like they're clearly in the thick of their grief, in the thick of their pain, and you come in and say, God has a higher purpose for that. God's going to use this for good. Like you use religious language to try to dismiss the hurt that they're feeling. There's plenty of other examples like that. But spiritual bypassing is when we use religious language to kind of get away from things that are maybe difficult or hard to handle, and we just kind of like try to numb the other person with spiritual platitudes. So religion can be harmful in these ways. This is not an exhaustive list on either side. Religion can be good in a lot of other ways. It can be harmful in a lot of other ways. But really the point maybe this morning, or this is kind of the intro of the sermon. You guys are like, oh, Jesus. Okay, this is the intro. The conclusion is really short. But the intro point is religion in and of itself is a good thing. It can be used in harmful ways, but there's so many ways it can be used for good. And religion is a set of beliefs and practices that unite us and connect us as a community to each other and to the spiritual world. So a religion is often centered around a story and shaped by a story, and then we create our practices out of that story. This is where we're going to get, this is where we're going to land the plane. The past few weeks, we've been talking about Abide in Me as a sermon series about resurrection. What does it look like for the resurrection to impact our personal lives? What does it look like for the resurrection to impact the way we relate to God? And this morning is, what does resurrection look like as we learn how to interact as a community? How does the story of the resurrection impact our religious beliefs and practices? Does that make sense? So we're talking about resurrection overall in this series. I just gave you a long diatribe about religion being generally a good thing. And the question we're going to land is, okay, how do we bridge these two things together? What is the resurrection story? How does it impact and influence our religious beliefs and expressions? That's where we're landing it. All right, so how does it do that? A few points, there's probably plenty, but I want to say that a community of resurrection is a community of inclusion. A community that's built around the story of the death and resurrection of Christ is a community that should be shaped as a community of inclusion. When Jesus died on the cross, the world got dark, there was a giant earthquake, and the veil in the temple in Jerusalem tore. Now, the veil in the temple was symbolic. It was like this literal wall between the presence of God, which was behind the veil, and the people of God, which were in front of the veil. And the only people that could go behind the veil in the temple were the priests. They went to the Holy of Holies, and this symbolized, this is where God's presence resides. And the only people that had direct access to this type of presence of God are priests. And that's symbolized by the veil that kept the presence of God from the people of God, right? Except for the priest. That's the Baptist alliteration of the peace. Presence, people, priests. There's probably some other stuff there. Anyway, when Jesus died, the veil tore, and it symbolized that the presence of God is now accessible to all. Paul talks about the priesthood of all believers, that it's no longer just a special person that has specific access to God. Everyone who wants to seek God can find God. The presence of God is now available to all. So the community of the death and resurrection of Christ, that community is a community of inclusion. Now, one thing I love about the United Methodist Church is that one of the things that's kind of foundational to its character and identity is that it's a big tent religion. It's a big tent faith. And what that means is people from all walks of life, politically, socially, wherever you're at, are welcome at the table in communion. They're welcome in this community. It's a big tent where people from all different areas of life can come in and be included in the kingdom of God. And that's reflective of a community of inclusion. That's reflective of the veil being torn and the presence of God being now accessible to all. The Methodist Church is a big tent faith. All are welcome. And the reason Matt's not here this morning is because he's over in Charlotte, and there's like hundreds of pastors, United Methodist pastors, having conversations, some of them which center around how big is the tent? Who all is actually welcome? Could the kingdom of God be even more expansive than we thought? A community of the resurrection is a community of inclusion. The veil has been torn. The presence of God is now accessible to all. And I love that the United Methodist Church is saying, what does that look like? How big can this tent be? How many are welcome? It's a community of inclusion. Now, a community of resurrection is also a community of second chances and a community of healing. Death is not the end. When Christ came and conquered the grave, he told us death is not the end. And there's so many parts of our life that aren't actual death, but little deaths in our lives, things that were broken in us, mistakes or failures that we made that we feel like we can't recover from, things that we think are too big for God to redeem. And the resurrection says there's nothing that's, if I can conquer the grave, I can conquer your little grave, right? I can bring life to the things that are dead in you. The community of resurrection is a community of second chances in healing and life breathing. And we are a community that embraces and emphasizes grace and mercy, and maybe God can redeem and restore the things that were once dead and broken. So a community of resurrection is a community of second chances and healing. A community of resurrection is also a community of hope. We know that death is not the end. We know that there's a grander story on the other side of this where God, we believe, is the creator of the universe. We have a God who is good and he's powerful. And he's telling us this is not the end. Jesus, when he conquered the grave, gave us a hope and expectation that this is not the end of it. And on the other side, there is fullness and restoration and healing and beauty. And because we can believe that that's the end goal for us, we can live now from a place of hope and trust in that. So a community of resurrection is a community of hope. And similar to that, it's a community of courage, a community that's not afraid to take risk because the biggest risk has already been taken. Jesus already went and died and conquered the grave. And what other risk we could take would be similar. Jesus has proven that he is with us and he can conquer even the hardest things. So that inspires us to become a community of courage. Okay. Religion is a system of beliefs and practices that connects us as a community to each other and to the spiritual world. It unites us around a common story. Our religious expression, our religious community, is shaped by the life, teachings, death, and resurrection of Christ. So the question for us is, how does this story shape our daily, weekly, and lifelong practices? What does it look like to be a community of resurrection, a people of the resurrection? Let's pray.